Okay, can you hear me? Okay, great. I'm Morgan. I've already had a presentation or an introduction. Good morning, afternoon, whatever the hell it is. I made this mistake in the past. Let's kill this guy so we don't have that little overlay. Perfect. So, I'm Morgan. I am the developer of Gosling and Ricochet Refresh, working for an organization called Blueprint for Free Speech. We are a nonprofit kind of focused on journalist and whistleblower protections. When I'm not doing that, I am also the browser team lead at the Tor project, where I oversee a team of 8 engineers developing Tor browser for Android, and mobile browser. But today, I'm here to talk about Gosling. So what is Gosling and what does it do? Gosling is a Rust library for developing peer-to-peer applications that has all of these lovely properties, and then encryption for secrecy, anonymity, hole punching, censorship circumvention, client authentication, metadata resistance, and optional application-specific authorization extensions. So I'm going to go over all that stuff. So it's built on Tor and Onion Services. Jeremy talked about Onion Services a little bit beforehand. This is a kind of a short talk, so I'm not going to go into the details of how Tor and Onion Services work specifically. I kind of assume this crowd probably knows it already. But the main high-level idea that you need to understand is that the Tor network allows you to connect to endpoints anonymously, and then Onion Services are kind of the reverse of that, where people can host services anonymously. And they're only accessible through the Tor network. So how does Gosling work? So Gosling is just a library. It's kind of like libp2p in the sense that you use it to build peer-to-peer applications. Every user has an ID, an Onion Service ID, which Jeremy went over earlier. This ID serves two purposes within Gosling. So one, it's a destination, an endpoint. It's an Onion Service that you connect to and you host. And finally, it's also an identifier that's used for authenticating clients that connect to an Onion Service. So in a Gosling peer-to-peer networked application, every peer hosts an Onion Service, and if you want to connect to peers, you connect to their Onion Service. So we get end-to-end encryption with forward secrecy by default because we're going through Tor. You get anonymity for free because, again, you're going through Tor. There is no way to leak your actual IP address by using Gosling, presuming you don't do something silly like, as part of the optional application extension, say, hello, my IP address is 192.whatever. If you don't do that, then you can't leak your IP address, but that's on you. There's no central registrar, no signups, no need to associate your Onion Service ID or your peer ID, whatever you want to call it, with actual identifying information. Again, because you're using Tor, you get hole punching for free. You only need to make an outbound connection from your computer to the Tor network. And you get censorship circumvention, again, with Tor. So there's, again, no authority or gatekeeping. Nothing stops anybody from hosting an Onion Service. If you can connect to the Tor network, you can create very easily a new Onion Service ID. If you want to get rid of that and start over, you can do that. It is very straightforward, and there's no overhead in really doing this. So you might be thinking to yourself, okay, that's really cool. So you host Onion Services on Tor. Good job. This is where we actually get the value out of this. Client authentication. So in the Tor network, Onion Services are self-authenticating. If you can connect to an Onion Service, you as a client understand this is actually the endpoint that I am trying to get to. There is no possibility for a machine in the middle attack. There is no possibility of somebody else having like swapped the identity or redirected the DNS request or whatever. You can, as a client, have certainty that if you connect to an Onion Service and the connection exists and it succeeds, you know you're going to the endpoint that you think you're going to. The problem is this is supposed to be an authenticated peer-to-peer system. So how does an Onion Service verify that a client coming in is who they say they are? So clients using Gosling basically make a claim that they're the owner of some Onion Service ID, right? I mentioned earlier that Onion Service IDs serve two parts. They're what you connect to and also who they are, an identifier, a unique identifier per client. So an Onion Service ID is actually a public key. Specifically, it's an ED25519 public key. Again, as Jeremy mentioned in the previous talk. If a user connects to your service and they claim that they're the owner of an unnamed service ID, what they're actually claiming is that they own the private key that was used to generate that public key. So to verify that a Goslin client, which connects to a peer, connects to a peer's onion service, we basically just ask them to sign a particularly crafted message proving that, okay, you claim that you're, you know, abc123.onion, prove it with cryptography. So that's the sort of client verification side of connecting to verified hosts. In addition, we also have optional application-specific extensions. So a lot of this is inspired from Ricochet Refresh, which I kind of mentioned earlier. And part of that protocol involves basically presenting a message saying, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so. I would like to add you as a contact. And so when designing Goslin, we were like, okay, but we kind of need that sort of idea, but we don't want to like hard-code it to make it only work in the instant messenger context, but also work in any kind of peer-to-peer application context. So there's a little part piece of the protocol that allows you to send arbitrary messages along with the protocol that allow you to build these application-specific extensions. So you can add in functionality like peer block lists or allow lists, invite codes, proof of work or stake schemes, whatever. And finally, you get metadata resistance. You get part of this, most of this, just from onion services. So all the communication contents are end-to-end encrypted and stay entirely within the Tor network. Client identities are not exposed at all. And there's no way to know which peers have connected to other peers because all this sort of information is only known to the peers involved. So it sounds great. What's the problem here? So one problem with onion services is that if you know the onion service ID or the endpoint of an onion service, you can tell if it's online. So you might think to yourself, well, that's true of any kind of thing. You know, if I know CNN's URL, I can tell if CNN's online. If I have internet, I just connect to it. So the problem with that is that applications which use onion services in this way, for instance, Ricochet Refresh, are not servers on the internet somewhere. They are actual people who use actual computers and have actual lives that correlate with their uptime of those computers. So one of the problems we wanted to solve was we didn't want arbitrary people who just happen to know your username or your peer ID in this context to be able to tell if you're using your computer or not. So, and then one other caveat here is onion service client authorization doesn't solve this problem. So it's this little Tor feature that requires you to have a particular key in order to additionally, like, it's additional authentication information needed to connect to an onion service. But the problem is that even if you don't have the key, but you know the onion service ID, you can still determine if the onion service was online over a certain window of time. So it doesn't solve this problem, but it does decrease the sort of time resolution of kind of knowing when people are online or offline. So we kind of call this problem cyberstalking, where, you know, if you know the service ID, you can connect to somebody and figure out if they're online or offline. At best, it's just a privacy violation. If you are a malicious third party, you can get a sort of profile of somebody's online offline status. A quite malicious third party can potentially discover your guard node. So for example, you can enumerate a list of guard nodes. If you have some sort of DDoS bot network, you can just verify if somebody is online, DDoS, or knock off a guard node, see if the user goes offline, and kind of step through the guard nodes this way. A very malicious third party could use legal interventions or hacking or running malicious guard nodes to identify the actual IP address of an onion service using this online-offline profile. So we wanted to avoid that in the general case. One other little thing here is that if you are using one of these types of applications that use an onion service as your endpoint that other peers connect to, but you don't broadcast your service ID, then you're fine. If you can trust the people you've shared it with to not try to dox you or discover where you are or whatever, then you're fine. Onion services are not generally enumerable. So if you're running an onion service and you never tell anybody what the ID is, then nobody can tell that it was all in or offline. All right. So what we want. We want authenticated peers to be able to connect to each other and communicate. We want unauthenticated peers to not be able to determine people's online or offline status, but you also want unauthenticated peers to have a pathway to becoming authenticated. So obviously you can't do all these things at the same time. And a lot of these types of applications kind of require you to share your service ID for basic functionality. Like if I want to chat with a friend, I have to tell them what my username is, right? So the solution in Gosling is to split the responsibility across multiple identity services. So you just have one identity service, which is used as basically as an introduction point. And so in sort of the instant messaging context, this is the ID that you would give people to invite them to chat with you. And so they would connect to this identity service, and then the Gosling protocol will, one, verify if you actually want to be friends, want to be peers or whatever, and if they succeed this handshake, then they are given their own special unique identity service they are allowed to connect to, and that's where the actual application logic happens. So basically what this means is that to acquire new peers, they have to go through your identity service, but if you don't need any more peers, then you can just turn that identity service off, and then all of your friends or contacts or peers or whatever you want to call them, each have different endpoints they connect to. And if you ever want to revoke their access, you can just stop running your identity services. That's what I talked about basically just now. So the basic plan here is basic idea is that you can't solve the problem in a general case, but you can give users control over their visibility and what they share and what sort of metadata they expose about themselves. I feel like I blazed through this, but that's fine. I have a whole bunch of links to documentation. We have a design doc, protocol spec, a usage guide, along with both a Rust and a C++ sort of example toy chat application, which kind of lets you interact with and play with the protocol in sort of a stepwise command line way, and also create documentation because it's Rust. There's a little screenshot of the example application. You kind of see where you can like start your identity service, stop it, start endpoints, end endpoints, send messages, that type of thing. List the peers that are connected to you. There's a Rust version, which just uses the create directly, and a C++ version, which uses the CFFI version. Okay, a couple of shout-outs from the organization I work for. We have this NoSlap project, which is a sort of project which helps journalists and whistleblowers and organizations defend themselves against frivolous lawsuits, which are kind of weaponized in Europe. We have this under development STERS project, which aims to sort of support whistleblowers. And of course, my two little tools, or some of my tools I work on, Ricochet Refresh, which is kind of the inspiration for this whole library and the idea of peer-to-peer audience service applications and reducing the sort of exposed metadata. That's currently under active development, thanks to a grant from NLNet. And then something which people might find useful, they don't find Gosling useful, is a crate called Tor Interface. If you look it up on crates.io, it basically encapsulates a lot of the nonsense of integrating the legacy Tor daemon, as well as the new RD implementation, and kind of wraps all of that stuff in a relatively simple and somewhat opinionated API surface. So if you want to integrate Tor into your service, into your application, or you want to programmatically start or stop running services or connect things over Tor, you should give this crate a check out. And that's that. I have so much time for questions, I think.
There is indeed plenty of time for questions, so let's get going. All right, Jeremy, see your hand.
This better be a softball, Jeremy.
Okay, so regarding the identity onion service that you described to mm-hmm. mitigate the risk of checking what your uptime is, so there is an alternate way of gaining security with that. One of my Ricochet contacts does this thing where they only sign on once every 24 hours for only a couple minutes at a time, mm-hmm. and they figure that if I want to send a message, I'll just have it queued in Ricochet Refresh, and they'll get it when they sign on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, does the approach you describe of using a separate identity onion service, does that sort of improve orthogonally to what MyContact does? Like if you combined those two, would that grant you additional security in some threat models?
Potentially, I guess. If you don't trust your contacts, then that sort of extreme approach could be useful. So what I would imagine instead, working on a new version, which includes this sort of visibility controls and visibility features around your online status. In Ricochet Refresh 4, we're on version 3 now, what you would probably do is they would add you and whoever else they want to talk to on Ricochet, and you would initially connect to their identity service, and once everybody is all friends and in everybody else's list, they can just stop running their identity service, right? And then the only person who would be able to know their uptime in this case would be you, because you'd be able to connect to their one onion service endpoint that only you know and they know. And so at that point, presuming they trust you not to do all the various things I was talking about, then they can just leave that on. Alternatively, if they don't trust you either, they can also just turn off their endpoints and only connect to you whenever they come online. Or do the similar type of thing where they just like only come on once to see if they have any queued messages for me, for example.
Cool. Is there any chance that Ricochet Refresh might add a GUI option to automate that particular threat model?
Maybe. At the moment, the current plan is to have a sort of kind of familiar setting to set your visibility. So by default, you'll be able to set yourself in totally online. Anybody can talk to me. Or a hidden mode where only your friends can see you, or a completely sort of invisible mode where the only time you ever connect to a contact is if you explicitly try to connect to them, and then of course an offline mode where nothing's online and you're not connecting to anybody. So, kind of.
Okay, makes sense, thanks.
Well, wait for the microphone.
Hello, yeah, I just have a question. Thanks for the talk and for the great work. That looks really interesting. I look forward to try the Tor interface. I can see how you abstracted away all the stuff you did for Ricochet and you made it like libraries. Mm-hmm. But there's just, I think, one thing that is missing to make it like really a complete alternative to like lib peer-to-peer. It's being able to do a DHT, distributed hash table. So is it something yet that you think about adding at some point, or do you think it could be useful to have that in Gosling?
What would you want to store in this distributed hash table?
Well, it could be many things. I mean, usually when you build this decentralized peer-to-peer system, right, at some point you want a DHT. I guess for a chat communication you don't need it because you exchange your contacts. But let's say you want a directory for something. It can be contact, it can be anything else, you know.
So at the moment, I have thought about this in the context of Ricochet Refresh, so in Ricochet Refresh, we kind of have this very hard, somewhat self-imposed constraint of being exclusively peer-to-peer and not needing to run any extra infrastructure apart from the Tor network. Yeah. In the context of Ricochet Refresh, I have been thinking about, once this version is working as purely peer-to-peer, how can we add additional useful functionality, Discord-like servers, for example, or whatever. And I think that those types of things could be built on top or kind of adjacent to the purely peer-to-peer part, but it's not really something I'm thinking about too actively right now.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I can hold it. Thank you for the talk. I guess my question, which maybe you clarified and I missed, but Gosling, is it based solely on Ardi, or can I use it with CTOR? And if I can use it with CTOR, do you have, like, can I configure Gosling to work with Hunix, basically, when the Tor binary is on like some other box?
Short answer, yes. Longer answer. So Gosling was originally built to work with CTOR. there is a experimental feature in the crate itself that allows you to integrate the RD client crate, so it's completely in proc. Outside of that, we recently received a patch from somebody on the internet to add support for configuring the CTOR daemon using the kind of standard environment variables that everybody expects in terms of like the control port password or control port control file or whatever, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you go actually now and download the Ricochet Refresh alpha, it's an alpha because it has a whole new backend, it is using the Tor interface crate, which uses CTOR and is kind of configured in this way. So longer answer is yes.
All right, we have time for one last question before we move on. Who wants to hold the spatula? All right, well, in that case, let's give it up one more time for Morgan, everyone.
Thank you.